Today's guest for the Postdoc Way is Dr. Samuel Wertheimer, who is the managing director of Polywog LLC and a former private equity partner at OrbiMed Advisors LLC. Dr. Wertheimer is also the keynote speaker for the upcoming 2013 Bioscience Visions Summit in Madison, Wisconsin. So welcome, Dr. Wertheimer, to the Postdoc Way.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
All right. Well, we're going to get started with just asking you to look at your career right now and what you do. And in terms of, well, this age of distilled information, rapid digestion of information, how would you describe yourself to your community using simple taglines like those meta tags?
My current activity is engaged in financing the future of healthcare companies. I've evolved from a scientist and to a venture capitalist to what is now a new form of financing for healthcare companies, which is the result of recently passed legislation, the Jobs Act. Jumpstart Our Business Startups Act, which was passed in April of last year. And critically, just last Wednesday, the SEC commissioners voted to enact the rules that will govern the activity related to Jobs Act. So,
okay. Well, we'll get on more of the SEC a little later in the interview, but I'm actually surprised that they actually ruled, or, well, I guess they made what a resolution to get on making these rules now for crowdfunding.
Well, it was the act charged the SEC with putting in place the rules that govern the securities related to the Jobs Act. So they were supposed to have done that by December of last year. It's now July. They're a little late, but the flag has been raised. So we can go forward. We're starting to go forward.
It's good to hear, especially from the SEC side. All right. Well, just starting out with you and how you got going in this field. I think a lot of our readers would like to go back in time with you and look at you as you were in school getting your apparently an MPH in epidemiology, I can't pronounce today, and a PhD in biomedical sciences later on.
Sure.
And these fields are classically associated with doing, let's say, an academic postdoc and doing research at the bench. So how did you transition from getting these essentially classical degrees in very classical biological fields here and transition to where you're currently at right now?
Sure, sure. So I actually started my career thinking that I would be a straightforward academic scientist. As you mentioned, I did do a master's in public health and epidemiology at Yale University. After that, I did a PhD in basic biomedical sciences, which is essentially immunology and molecular biology at NYU. When I finished my PhD, I started a postdoc at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center here in New York City. And all along the way, I thought I was following the traditional steps for an academic appointment. And these were just the necessary, milestones along the path. All of this was occurring in the early to mid 1990s, which was actually a period of contraction at the NIH. I got to the point where I suddenly realized actually when my son was born, I suddenly realized that the probability of making an actual living as a scientist was not that likely. Academic science is a fantastic career if you're in the top, say, 5% of grant recipients. Otherwise, it's a brutal life. And I was looking for other opportunities. I'd always had an interest in the intersection of business and science, and how does science get translated into a commercial enterprise. Being in New York City and having sort of family reasons to stay in the city, which is not a hotbed of the biotech industry, I had to look for other opportunities. I actually transitioned out of my postdoc. I went to a law firm here in the city that had a large biotech intellectual property business. They wrote and prosecuted patent applications for a lot of academic institutions, a lot of biotech and medical device companies. And that was how I transitioned out of the laboratory. At that point, that was not an uncommon route. It was still relatively early in the biotech days, and there weren't that many people with scientific backgrounds in law firms. So law firms were quite interested in people with a deep scientific background. In fact, they wanted me to go to law. They wanted to pay for me to go to law school. I have to say, while the intellectual property may be the foundation for much of the commercialization of the biotech industry, actually writing patents is like eating sawdust. It's very, very tedious, having just sort of completed a great deal of academic work, the idea of working during the day, going to law school at night was not very exciting to me. At that point, I sort of woke up to the idea that, oh, there's this large financial services industry related to bringing capital to healthcare. And I made the transition away from the law firm to financial services, and was involved for many years in raising capital for individual companies. And then late 1999, early 2000, I joined, interestingly, a colleague of mine who had been a researcher at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center at a firm called OrbiMed Advisors, which is a large asset management group specializing in healthcare. They were interested in raising venture capital specific funds for biotech investing, and I joined them in early 2000 to invest. To raise the funds and to invest the funds. We were very successful. We raised over $1.5 billion, which were invested across four funds. And it's a very interesting, exciting time. But after the financial crisis of the late 2000s, and even before that, the venture capital community was shifting. Started to shift away from a willingness to invest in early stage innovative science to becoming more of a a late stage private equity kind of financial structured model. Partly because the timelines of healthcare development don't entirely fit the requirements of the venture capital model. So I started looking for other opportunities at that point. About that time, sort of late in 2011, I saw the legislation that became the Jobs Act, and with some other partners have started our new firm, Polywog, to take advantage of that.
If I may interject here a minute here. I'm just following this trajectory you've had from being at the bench to being at a law firm to being with OrbiMed and then actually shooting off and starting your own LLC, essentially Polywog. Now, it sounds like you weren't taking any kind of classes in law, in policy or anything like that, or were you? I mean, how were you kind of picking up the I guess you could say the slack on not being very knowledgeable in the law field and public policy?
Well, I mean, I did do, there were some classwork that I did need to do, and there were, you know, requirements that I needed to fulfill. I was never a patent lawyer. I was a registered patent agent. So that meant that you had to take an examination that showed that you understood patent law and understood how to write patents and, you know, deal with the process of obtaining patents. And that required some coursework and some effort. And
was this covered by the places you were working for, or did you do this on your own?
Much of it was covered by places I was working for. Some of it I've done on my own. Quite frankly, I've always felt that if you could succeed in getting a PhD, you probably had the ability to learn most of this material on your own. There are good reasons to go and do an MBA or to get a law degree. I would never dissuade somebody who's in one of those programs from completing the program, or if you can go into the program, there are advantages. You know, I had to make a living, and so I didn't have the necessarily the luxury of saying, well, I'm going to take 2 years out now and go and, you know, get an MBA.
So for our readers, you would recommend diversifying your interests and hopefully having maybe your employer pick up some of the costs of education, of additional education. But for someone following your path, let's say, you would need some legal training.
You might need some legal training if you were following my precise path. I think it's obviously going to depend on each individual's situation. I took a contorted path and sort of, you know, felt my way. It's not necessarily a path that I advise people to follow. When I talk to young scientists or postdocs, I mean, you know, the unfortunate thing is I just realized the other day that, you know, I left the bench 20 years ago. So I've sort of been out of science longer than I was in science at this point in life, even though I still think of myself first as a scientist, secondly as a business person. What I very often advise people who are scientists, postdocs, who are saying, you know, I recognize I'm not going to have the opportunity to pursue an academic scientific career. You know, I often do say that if you can afford it, both in terms of time and money, the law is a wonderful, very broad degree. It sort of gives you a lot of flexibility. So it's a great thing to do. If you can't if you can't afford it for whatever reason, and you're interested in stepping outside academic science, then I often tell people that they should look to get a business opportunity, largely in business development. I think is a great place for people to go. There they have the opportunity to work with scientists. They have the opportunity to work with lawyers on licensing and business transactions. They start to look at some of the financial issues involved. So it's a great place where somebody with scientific knowledge can engage others in, you know, an industrial setting without having, and they can have a job. So, you know, that's an opportunity. That's a path to follow.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And I know I took you a little off track there with, you were about to talk about Polywog and what you do there currently. Just before we get into that question, I just wanted to ask one other one.
Sure.
How much do you see yourself now using your science background in what you do?
Well, I use my science background every day because a great deal of what I do as part of Polywog is I'm engaged in diligencing potential investment opportunities that we're going to put on our platform. So I spend a lot of time discussing scientific innovation with the innovators. I spend a great deal of time speaking to key opinion leaders in whatever field it might be, trying to understand what's the current standard of care, how would this innovation impact that care. What is the, you know, is the scientific rationale for this innovation reasonable? You know, is there a reasonable probability of success in this approach? And so I use a great deal more science today than I ever did when I was a bench scientist, and I was much more constrained in specific scientific topic that I was working on.
So it sounds like when you were at the bench, you were more of a specialist in one little niche area, and now you've actually become the classic scientist that knows science.
Yeah, I mean, at the bench, my knowledge was a mile deep and an inch wide. You know, today my knowledge is a mile wide and an inch deep. You know, it's different activities require different levels of knowledge and ability to, you know, formulate questions. You still have to be able to ask what are the important questions and, you know, how, and go and figure out, well, how do I find the answer, or how do I find the people who have the who might have the answer?
Okay. So let's talk about Polywog, which is where you are right now. Sure. You're the managing director of that company. Now, for those who don't know too much about Polywog and what it does, can you just describe briefly, what do you do?
Right. So what we are doing is providing a platform that will link investors and innovative companies. So I'm sure many of you are familiar with Kickstarter or Indiegogo, and these are sort of crowdfunding project platforms. So those two in particular do a lot of movies, they do videos, they do some products. People donate essentially, or they pre-buy a product. What none of those companies can offer is an equity share in a company. And what the Jobs Act has enabled is now a private company can sell equity in itself over a platform such as Polywog. So we are a FINRA-registered broker-dealer that will enable individuals to purchase equity in innovation. Now, at this point, it's not true crowdfunding. It's limited to individuals who are accredited investors, which is an SEC term. An accredited investor are people who have net assets of at least $1 million, excluding their home primary residence, or income of at least $200,000 for an individual, $300,000 for a married couple. So it's not everybody. That will come eventually. There are that's a provision of the Jobs Act, but those rules are not in place yet. But Polliwog is looking to offer to accredited investors an opportunity to invest in healthcare innovation. So that's what we're doing in a nutshell. Think of it this way. There are many people who are interested for a variety of reasons in seeing advancements in a specific disease, be it Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease or a specific type of cancer or improvements in diabetes care. Many of these people donate to a medical foundation working in this area. Many of these people would like to invest in companies that are working on this innovation. They want to invest for a couple of reasons. They want to invest because they see this is a tremendous market opportunity, and if they invest in the right companies, they have the potential to make a lot of money. They may want to invest for altruistic reasons because they want to see an improvement in Alzheimer's disease. The Jobs Act enables this. It's opening a new asset class, private equity, to the average investor, where it's been sort of restricted, because now with changes in the law, individual investors can invest less money in each individual investment opportunity. That means that you can mitigate your risk by diversifying. So in the past, as an individual to invest in one private transaction, you might have had to invest in $100,000. Well, if you were going to invest in an Alzheimer's disease, a company developing an innovative therapy in Alzheimer's disease, and you were going to invest $100,000, you had to be very wealthy to do that, because the probability of success is pretty low. The Jobs Act now says, well, because they've increased the number of investors who can participate, so instead of having to invest $100,000, you as an individual could invest, say, $10,000 in an investment.
Yeah, you were asking about crowdfunding for specific scientific projects. And
yes.
I have to say there I'm less certain how that will play. It's possible that in some manner it will be successful. I think that I would have not predicted Kickstarter would be successful and raise the amounts of capital that they've been able to raise. So it's quite possible that there will be there will be people who are interested in providing funding for specific scientific programs. I tend to think that will be secondary to what I'm talking about, which is an equity funding, where people have an actual ownership interest in what they've actually made an investment as opposed to a donation. And I think that's a whole different level of opportunity.
So how do you find clients for Polliwog? How do you find the investors, and how do you find the companies?
Well, the companies have actually been finding us. I mean, we haven't even really been, because the rules have not yet gone into place.
we've not been particularly active in soliciting companies, and we have more than 100 companies which have approached us looking for financing because there's such a dearth of capital available to companies at this point. So finding companies has not been a very difficult thing. Finding investors will be more complicated, more difficult, but really it will be that Polliwog is becoming the intersection of financial services meet social media. So a major component of the Jobs Act is the repeal of something called the prohibition of general solicitation. In the past, if you were a private company raising capital, you could not go out and broadly advertise the fact that you were raising money. You had to, you could go to friends and families, you could go to qualified groups like venture capital investors, but you couldn't sort of go and announce on some social media network, I'm raising money to develop an innovative therapy for, you know, pick your disease. That was frankly illegal. That prohibition has now been removed. And so if we're raising money for a company working on Parkinson's disease, we can go into the online Parkinson's communities and say, you know, we're raising money for a company working on Parkinson's disease. If you're interested, you can come to our site and you can see all sorts of information about this company. Now, the venture capital community tends to be leery of investing in Parkinson's disease. It's not clear what the mechanism of action of most of these drugs are because it's not clear what the mechanism of Parkinson's, you know, the root causes of Parkinson's are. The market is reasonably small. There are maybe 5 million people in the United States with Parkinson's disease. That's, you know, reasonably small for venture capital investment. But that's not small for the Parkinsonian community. If there are 5 million Parkinsonians in the United States and figure each of those people a network of just 10 people who are engaged in their disease in some way, suddenly you're talking about 50 million people. So if there are 50 million people who are interested in Parkinson's disease, then some percentage of them will be interested in a company working on an innovative therapy to treat Parkinson's disease. And some percentage of those people will say, you know what? I give money to the Parkinson's Disease Foundation. I give money to the Michael J. Fox Foundation. I'd like to make an investment in this company working on Parkinson's disease. And that's just an example. And, you know, the power of the internet is in the past, to raise money, you had to do it as a one-on-one process. So I had to talk to you. The probability that you were interested in the deal that I happened to be selling was probably low. But now I can talk to hundreds of thousands, millions of people about a transaction, and they can come and they can learn about the opportunity online. And so the potential to find individuals who might be interested in investing is much greater than it's ever been.
Well, that's great to hear. And that gives you a good future as well in terms of your company being a successful platform for investors and companies. Well, I'm wrapping up our interview, and I just kind of wanted to ask a final question here. When you were branching out into essentially law and patent law and whatnot, what did your colleagues at the bench think of you?
Ah, well, that's an interesting question. It varied. There were some people who, quite frankly, seemed to think of me as a traitor to science, which is kind of a funny mentality. But of course, you know, you put so much time and effort into a career path in science. It's really unlike so many other career paths. It requires such a high level of dedication, and you know, people kind of didn't understand that idea that I was willing to leave. And then there were many other people who saw, who understood it. I think now, you know, as I said, I've been out of, you know, I left the bench roughly 20 years ago. I think now it's probably much more common for people to go out into other paths. The biotech industry is much more mature. It's the ranks of the executives are nowadays in the biotech industry much more likely to be former scientists. There are many more people in the, you know, law, you know, in patent law who have scientific backgrounds. Many more people in banking have scientific backgrounds. So it's more common today than it was when I left. Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear. Although I think if you look through the postdoc way and scroll through the stories, a lot of people are still saying, my
still,
mentor
it's still seen
didn't
as a betrayal
talk to me and...
by many people.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, academic science is a pyramid, right? They it's got this giant base of graduate students and then some of them become postdocs, but you know, to get to the pinnacle of the pyramid, it's very tiny at the top. So most people can't occupy
yes.
that pinnacle. So you have to go and do something else. So
Understand. I'm a former postdoc myself.
That's right.
So I
wish everybody lots of luck. And my advice to people is be creative and be willing to take chances and realize that the intelligence that you had to apply to solving complex scientific problems puts you far in advance of the average individual. So all scientists are above average.
Thank you for your time today and for speaking with us. And also for those of you who are in the Madison area or would like to travel to the Madison area, Dr. Wertheimer will also be one of the keynote speakers at the upcoming 2013 Bioscience Vision Summit here.
It's a great pleasure.
So thank you again.
And I look forward to seeing you in Wisconsin.
Thank you.
Now that you got everybody you consider sharp.